Well, I have some good news for everyone tonight. Some good news and some better news, really. Congratulations, Lent is over. At the beginning of today's Mass, Lent is over. That's the good news. The better news is we're entering into the Triduum, which begins with a Paschal feast. So whatever Lenten things we were doing, we just ramp those up another 10 times, and we're good until Easter. So today we hear that the devil entered Judas. And I was just strikes me, like, how did that happen? You know, this contrast between what was going on with Judas and what we see in Jesus is very interesting to me. On the one hand, we have Judas, and he is ultimately the betrayer. And then we have Jesus, who is the king, the lover, our God. And obviously we want to live like Jesus, but in our world, sometimes it's hard to know how to live the way we're supposed to live. And yet, we are not God, so we can't exactly live as Jesus lived, but Jesus tells us right here in the gospel, he gave us a model to follow. So he's not going to ask from us something that he's not going to give us the ability to do. So we can follow him. So this contrast between Judas and Jesus, I'd like to start with maybe what are some of the characteristics of Judas to look at first? Judas had some good things going for him. He was a follower of Jesus Christ. He literally walked. He was one of the 12 apostles. He saw miracle upon miracle. He was put in a position of trust and confidence by Jesus and the apostles. He held the money for all of them. So far, so good. But as we often see in our own lives, maybe appearances aren't what they seem. So how did he fall? I think ultimately, Judas didn't trust Jesus. He thought he knew better. Jesus didn't live up to Judas's expectations. Jesus was supposed to be the mighty king, the warrior. And when Jesus began talking about dying, going to the cross, washing people's feet, that was too much for Judas. See, Judas couldn't see the good that was going on. He couldn't be thankful for being with Jesus. All he could focus on what was lacking. Talk of death, talk of crucifixion. This is what was stopping him. In the end, Judas loved himself more than, and his ideas more than he loved Jesus. He had a plan, and if even Jesus was in the way, then Jesus had to go. There was no humility, there was no obedience, there was no thankfulness. Jesus is different. We hear it in today's reading. He loved his own, and he loved them to the end. He wasn't focused on himself, but first the Father, and then his friends. He lived radically for others, and not for himself. Time and again, Jesus went out, saw the people, and had pity. Time and again, Jesus allowed his own plans to be altered by the need he saw before him. Jesus says over and over again that he comes to do the Father's will, not his own. In all of this, throughout the Gospels, Jesus was thankful. He thanks God the Father time and time and time again. So what Judas lacked and what Jesus had was willing the good of the other, which is love, being obedient to rightful authority, and being thankful for the gifts that we've been given, not focused on what we don't have. Now, all three of these things are really important. I'd like to focus on thankfulness tonight for two reasons. One, having a thankful disposition of heart is an antidote to much of what is wrong in our society today. And two, this Mass is a celebration of the institution of the Eucharist. And the Eucharist is thankfulness and thanksgiving par excellence. So when I talk about this disposition of heart, of gratitude, I want to make a distinction between that and kind of what we hear oftentimes is an attitude of gratitude. To me, an attitude of gratitude sounds like, you know, it's just something I do. It's kind of a plan. You know, it's a little bit of Pollyanna. I just get through with my positive attitude. And the problem with having a plan like that, as the philosopher Mike Tyson said, everyone has a plan until you get punched in the face. And so the problem is with this kind of, if I just have an attitude of gratitude, when things go wrong, I don't know how to deal with it. I haven't been prepared. I haven't actually seen the bad. I've just pretended that it wasn't there. And so what I'm talking about is something deeper than that. Again, I said a disposition of heart. And it's really seeing all of reality. Yes, seeing the bad, but more importantly, not letting the bad overshadow the good that is there. Everything we have is pure gift from God. Our intellect, our physical abilities, our next breath, even our very existence. All of it, pure gift. We didn't earn it, we can't earn it, and we can't lose it. Well, we can lose it, but that's another story. Now, despite this pure gift, like Judas, we often fail to see these goods and only focus on the negatives. And I think an example, maybe from my own life, will help kind of flesh this out a little bit. We have a house that we bought in the year 2000, 24 years ago. We've lived there for 24 years, raised our kids there, and we've lived just a great life there. This house has been warmth, it's been laughter, it's been a place to come to, it's been home. But our house is not the nicest house. I have friends with lots bigger houses and nicer homes. I have a friend with a pool in his house. I don't have a pool in my house. The fit and finish of my house is okay, but it's not like a nice house. And sometimes I will walk into my house and I'll think to myself, this house is no good. I see the blemishes on the trim. I know where the creaks in the floor are. I know what I haven't updated properly over the last 24 years. And when I get in that mode, all I see is the downside. I don't see the good. I don't see my home. I just see this thing, and I look past everything that's good. And I don't see reality is the problem, because as I started with, our house is a great house. It's a place where my family comes. My kids still can come to my house, even now that they've all grown. So living with a grateful disposition of heart is not ignoring the bad. The shortcomings in my house are real, but rather to see the whole picture and to recognize the good and to see how good that good is. I mean, if you can imagine somebody coming from a third world and asking just about any of us how we don't like our homes. We just don't see reality sometimes. So let's turn back to Judas. Judas got it all wrong. He saw Jesus as weak and someone who needed to go. He saw Jesus that wasn't strong. He thought he wasn't strong because he was talking about being killed. Saw him washing people's feet. But Judas also saw the miracles. He lived with Jesus. He just didn't see all that. Let's consider this cross that was such a stumbling block for Judas. It's the icon of all that is wrong and cruel with the world. It was the way that the Roman soldiers, or the Romans, told other people, we have control over you. It is the worst thing that they can do. And Jesus went there, and he was crucified, and he rose. He overcame the worst humanity could possibly give him. But Jesus couldn't see it because he got stuck at the folly of the cross. And the irony is, Jesus is the warrior that Judas thought he wasn't. He leads his angels into battle. He defeats the devil. He defeats the Romans. He's the victorious king. He's everything that Judas thought he wasn't, because Judas couldn't see past the negatives through the lacking. In a few moments, Father will raise the host and the chalice, and we will celebrate the Eucharist. The Catechism of the Catholic Church has this to say about the Eucharist. The Eucharist is a sacrifice of thanksgiving to the Father, a blessing by which the Church expresses her gratitude to God for all his benefits, for all that he has accomplished through creation, redemption, and sanctification. Eucharist means, first of all, thanksgiving. What do we see when we celebrate the Mass, when the host is raised, when the cup, the chalice is raised? Do we see a piece of bread and a cup of wine? Or are we able in gratitude to see reality, to see that Jesus gives us himself just as he said he would, that he comes to us, body, blood, soul, and divinity in the Eucharist, and deigns to be so vulnerable to us and so intimate that we get to consume him without him losing any of his almighty power. When we receive and we stand before the Eucharistic minister or one of the priests or me, and we hear the body of Christ, do we believe it? Is it the body of Christ? When we receive it and take it into our hearts, can we see that gift that we're given? There's a choice put before us today to live deeply a life of gratitude or not. To live a life rooted in reality, not missing the great good because of some of the bad. As we enter into the Triduum and then Easter, I encourage all of us to choose gratefulness, to be a Eucharistic people.